Smith. Maybe a couple of seconds and I will.
Tēnā koutou, I'm Selwyn Manning and welcome to this episode of A View From Afar. And today we are joined as always by political scientist and former Pentagon analyst Paul Buchanan. And this week we will discuss private enterprise and the conflict market. Most recently, New Zealanders discovered that its national airline had been in business with Saudi Arabia's military. After the revelations, Air New Zealand then announced it had cancelled the Saudi contract. Air New Zealand also admitted that it does business with the military wings of 5 to 6 other countries. The Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has instructed New Zealand's Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade to investigate this issue. And then there's Rocket Lab, once celebrated as a great Kiwi initiative. Now it is largely owned by and controlled by the United States' interests. And from its New Zealand base near Mahia, Rocket Lab sends satellites and equipment into orbit that are designed to provide advantage to United States military forces and fighters in global conflicts. How does this fit with New Zealand's independent culture and foreign policy? If the New Zealand government is transitioning toward a more ethics-based trade and service regime, should it tighten up on its compliance approval regimes? And should private enterprise read the tea leaves and back out of foreign military and conflict markets? Today, Paul and I will dig deep into this issue and to consider the implications for New Zealand's public and private sector interests. But first, before we do, here's an invitation to those of you who are joining us live. If you are joining us via Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, feel free to make comments, and if you do, we'll be able to include your interaction in this program. Okay, so let's cross to Paul, who is waiting online. Good afternoon, Paul.
Kia ora, Selwyn. I hope your side of the lockdown is going well.
It's not too bad. In the bunker here in Auckland Central, and we're getting a program out, so that's got to be a good thing. Paul, what do you make of this this issue of private enterprise trading and profiteering off conflicts and basically in business with military entities around the world?
Well, I'm of two minds. You know, I'm a pragmatist, I'm a realist, so that side of me says, well, someone's got to do it. That is supply weaponry and that sort of thing. On the other hand, I do have a little bit of an idealistic side, and that coincides with my Kiwi side, which is that the conundrum for New Zealand is that we purport to have an ethics-based foreign policy, a foreign policy that is independent of big player actions. Now, you know, we could do a whole sidebar on whether that's true or not, but the point is this. If we recognize that the weapons industry, as you well said, the conflict industry is a fact of human life, then we need to understand exactly what we're talking about. And what we are talking about exactly is something known as the kill chain. That is to say, the killing doesn't start when a trigger is pulled and a bullet enters human flesh. The kill chain begins with intelligence gathering, with the assembling of parts and components, not
procurement.
Only for weapons. You know, right. The whole, and that's why it's a chain. Because, for example, and this has come out here in New Zealand, as it turns out, there is a thriving, albeit small, weapons-related industry or defense industry. For example, in New Zealand, we produce range finders and laser optic devices that are used by militaries in foreign countries to better locate and fix on targets. Now, rangefinders are used for deer hunting, so they are a dual-use platform. But there are gun mount stabilization devices, for example, those that you put on ships, that sort of thing. Well, that's part of the kill chain. Now, the ethical question becomes, where do you draw the line? Do you stop at assembled weapons, but you continue ahead with rangefinders? Or do you stop entirely and say, not only will we not produce components for military weaponry, but we're going to get out of this business entirely. And of course, that'll bring up Rocket Lab in a little while. But let me pose something that is a bit of a conundrum. I happen to go through the list of strategic exports, as they're called, from New Zealand overseas, from 2018 to 2020, 2017 to 2019, excuse me. And there's a lot of stuff there that's pretty suspect, okay? A lot, you know, like, whoa, I can't believe we're doing this. And who we're selling to, because that's the other side is, you know, it's one thing to sell to NATO members. Mm. It's another thing to sell to the Saudis. Or the UAE,
yeah.
Or
Jordan, how does that fit the Kiwi way?
Exactly.
In a general test,
the Kiwi way, because it's all about trade. But let me give you
on that side of the elite ledger, but culturally amongst the common people, it's at odds.
Let me offer you this because it'll round out the discussion, so it doesn't look like we're just sitting here, you know, slamming the weapons industry. In amongst those strategic exports, you know, that I saw, and there might have been all told about 60 different types of export, and they're all classified. So small arms are, it's called MU1, munitions ID, MI1. MI1 are small arms, MI2 are larger weapons, MI8 was interesting because that's explosives. So I looked into that, and it turns out they were sending explosives to Cyprus. And I was like, that's interesting. Well, how about this? It turns out New Zealand is intimately involved in UN-led demining projects.
It's part of the multilateral apparatus, the United Nations efforts, the blue helmet type of work, all of that comes in. From the general public's point of view, it's all a mix. It could be good. You know, they see it in black and white terms. It could be all good and it could be all bad. You know, so what you're doing here is saying it's not. You've got to look at the detail. Is that correct?
Exactly. And then the Cyprus example is basically this. It appears that what New Zealand is sending to Cyprus are blasting caps to detonate the mines in the ground. So it's a good thing. It's an absolute good thing. Those type of exports, I think, are perfectly reasonable on both trade and ethical grounds.
And the public may remember that it was only a matter of a year and a half ago that New Zealand was found to be wanting with respect to the base in Afghanistan that it had occupied for quite some time and the surroundings, and that there were unexploded devices on the grounds around there. The Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, ordered the New Zealand Defence Force to basically clean up shop. Now, my understanding is it didn't have soldiers itself out there cleaning up those unexploded devices, but it contracted others to do so. And it may be, you know, that this type of thing fits into that type of thing of putting things right. But then there's the other side, like you've alluded to, that just that seems that in large amounts of, in some ways, you could say is quite business entity covert.
Let's look at it this way. There's two main filters that, in my opinion, need to happen before you export anything that could be turned into a weapon, anything that is part of that kill chain, to include telescopic sights. I mean, the full range. The first one, the easy one, I think, easy filter is, who are you selling to? Mm. Now, mind you, there are third parties. I mean, the end user on the certificate may not be the real end user after all.
That gets and tricky.
We need a lot of oversight and scrutiny, and here in New Zealand, we don't get it. I mean, let's be very honest. So the first one is, who are you selling to? Because selling to bad guys, quite frankly, is bad for business over the long term. The second one is, what are you selling them? And if you sell them componentry that they can put together in order to build a bomb, which is used on a hospital in Yemen, that's not good for business either, even though you may have shortfall, windfall profits as a result of these sales. So we need to scrutinize both dimensions of our strategic export regime here in New Zealand. Look, this is a problem that big countries, let's say Germany, France, they have huge weapons industries. They've been involved in conflicts, for a very long time. The United States, we won't even get into it. Mm. They don't have these ethical problems, okay? Mm. We do, because we are small, independent, and we're quite pacifist, yes, to be honest.
Well, and it's so nuclear-free status with respect to weaponry in New Zealand, for those that are overseas. And that's been in play since the 1980s. And that's why U.S. warships for many decades were not able to come in here, because there was, on their part, they would neither confirm nor deny that they were either, that they were equipped with nuclear weaponry or a part of that apparatus. So, look, Paul, I've got a document here that let's have a look at this. And this is a New Zealand government document, which what it does is it kind of details its considerations. And this comes into when we talk about Rocket Lab. So I'll just see if I can get that aligned up. Looks like it's not going to align. Oh, yes, here it is now. So, What we've got here is, and I'll just read it out for those that are listening on audio, it considers whether or not New Zealand can, with respect to Rocket Lab, and we'll certainly get to that, but it considers these points here, and the Minister, Stuart Nash, this is the guiding points that he has to consider. Payloads that contribute to nuclear weaponry programs or capabilities, that's out. Clearly under New Zealand's law, anything that contributes to that, It can't launch from New Zealand with respect to the Rocket Lab Enterprise. Payloads with the intended use of harming, interfering, or destroying other spacecraft or space systems on Earth, they can't be launched from New Zealand. Payloads with the intended end use of supporting or enabling specific defence, security, or intelligence operations that are contrary to government policy. Just put a side thing there, that seems to be quite grey area that New Zealand, I think the public deserves to have some tightening up on. And the last point, and payloads where the intended end use is likely to cause serious or irreversible harm to the environment. And that one seems to be once a catch-all should New Zealand think that things are going awry there as well. So that point there about, contrary to New Zealand government policy, I do think that that needs a lot of defining, and certainly from the government point of view of being able to communicate those points to, or that particular point to the New Zealand public. Paul, what's your reading on this particular points of exclusion, if you like?
Well, most of that is gobbledygook. I'm not going to mince words here. The oversight regime on the New Zealand conflict industry, to include Rocket Lab, is porous at best or non-existent at worst. The egregious violations of exactly those sort of phrases are rife in this industry in New Zealand. And even then, you know, again, you have this idea that it could cause harm to the environment, or it can't be used, you know, for the destruction of this, that, and the other. Well, Rocket Lab is about to send up a targeting satellite, real-time tactical targeting satellite. That's about as close to the bullet as you can get. They're going to fix the target with that satellite, and that target's going to die. So
this video here, I'll just play this so that, you know, people can become au fait with Rocket Lab, and this is a visual. So what's happening here is the countdown,
six,
of course.
Five.
This was earlier this year. Its first mission of 2021. There she goes. So there's an interesting thing. The Mahia Peninsula, from a New Zealand point of view, is obviously one where it's picturesque. A lot of people holiday there. I've holidayed there myself. I know that the minister, Stuart Nash, he has holidayed there. When he was Minister of Police, he put out a statement here, and one kind of wonders whether or not it was connected to the presence of Rocket Lab on the peninsula. It was announcing the shifting of police police base, if you like, or a police station to be established on the Mahia Peninsula. He talks about, you know, the holiday kind of thing, how the population on the peninsula goes up in the summer months and the school holiday times. And also, from the point of view, he makes reference to here with the more permanent population is also changing, especially with the arrival of one of New Zealand's most innovative companies, Rocket Lab. The company launches satellites into space from the Mahia Peninsula. Now, there's a lot of proud Kiwis on this this particular initiative, Paul, like you know. But the thing with Rocket Lab, and I know that you've dealt with him. I've got to do a hat tip to Ollie Nies, the investigative journalist here that has followed this issue and has reported on your views as well over the times. And he is keeping the public up to speed with this issue. Now, Paul, I know Ollie has gone into this. Can you tell our audience who owns Rocket Lab now? It started off as a celebrated Kiwi initiative. What's behind the ownership now?
Okay, let's do a real brief history on Rocket Lab. Rocket Lab is the brainchild of a genius Kiwi. We were very young at the time when he first started launching rockets. What it does is it launches what are known as light to medium boosters. So the rocket itself, it does not produce the satellites. In fact, it doesn't produce the nose cones at all. What it carries are what are called nano satellites. Satellites that nano just 2 years ago used to mean under 100 pounds in weight, throw weight as it's called. Now these things are the size of toasters. And what they do is they go into low altitude elliptical orbits. They launch constellations, so 20, 30, 50 of these things at a time. We can see one of Elon Musk's constellations in our nighttime sky regularly at the same time, every single night, shortly after 7 p.m., this light array comes across the southern skies. Well, Rocket Lab does exactly the same thing. And what's happened is they got started launching it about 5 years ago. They've done, I think, between a dozen and 15 launches. All but two of those launches have been for the U.S. military and intelligence community. And the reason for that, under the business model, is that the U.S. military and intelligence community will defray a lot of the costs of production until such a time as it becomes commercially viable for private entities to start putting their satellites on top of these boosters. And they're aiming for $5 million a launch. Now, that's incredible, because when you think of NASA, you know, it's $500 million a launch. So to get it down to $5 million is, you know, quite an achievement. Again, they're just doing the boosters. Now, the problem here, and it gets back to our oversight issue in the first instance, is that in spite of the minister's assurance and all that language, the minister does not know exactly what are on those payloads. We in fact, to know about the targeting satellites, that information was received from the U.S. Army itself, because the U.S. Army, it turns out, is a lot more transparent about what goes on to the, into the satellite pod. Our minister wants us to believe that he knows all about these things. That's a falsehood. Nothing in the contract with Rocket Lab or the U.S. government specifies that the New Zealand government will know in advance about the classified material going into the nose cone. And the nose cone, up until now, has deployed satellites that are used for geospatial mapping, that are used for signals intelligence intercepts. But now this upcoming launch is going to launch a constellation of satellites for the U.S. Army that will engage in real-time tactical targeting for field commanders, for battlefield commanders. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that the United States soldiers in the field somewhere in Central Asia are looking at an oncoming tank from a hostile place. They can target that tank from space and eliminate it in real time. So it's a warfighting capability. And apparently the minister wants to think that instead of targeting the enemy to kill them, you're going to target them to shower them with affection. So, you know, the oversight part is a serious problem. The other problem is that Rocket Lab is no longer Kiwi. Yeah. It's owned by American interests, to include this fellow Peter Thiel, you know, who is now very involved in the private intelligence agency Palantir. It has received CIA venture capital money. The CIA has this wonderful venture capital arm that has put big money. And yesterday, Rocket Lab went public on the NASDAQ, on the New York Stock Exchange. And in the space of 12 hours, it apparently raised something on the order of $5 to $6 billion, going from a value of $1.2 billion at the beginning of trading to a value of 7.8 or something, again, in one day. Now, this will allow it to expand its operations, but that also is changing because the Mahia Peninsula will continue to be used, but they're now increasingly going to use an Air Force base in Virginia, a space base, for launching of heavier payloads, because they're moving into the medium rocket, medium booster business. So it was a great example of Kiwi innovation. It has brought jobs to New Zealand. They manufacture the light boosters here in Auckland. But it is very much dominated by U.S. security interests, not by New Zealand's interests other than employment.
Mm. So once again, I'll just, you know, you made reference to some of the things that it's just taking up, and I'll just go to that page. Now, this is a statement out by Rocket Lab where it talks about the mission that is going to take place this month in March of 2021 this year. And it talks in quite specific terms, particularly relating to, for example, the U.S. Army Space and Missile Defense Command technology demonstrator, launch integration and program management services provider tri-step, you know, weather satellites, Pathfinder. This is all the payload that in the next mission that goes up. It's talking about two internet things, nanosatellites for companies, fleet, space, and my Ryota, procured by Tyvek. So it's also talking about Earth observation satellite for Black Sky via launch services provider space flight. So there are, this is interesting kind of mix, technology demonstration satellite for the University of New South Wales. So you can see when it sends up a rocket, it has got many clients on board. But some of those that are sitting here on behalf of the United States military apparatus, from a New Zealand cultural perspective, and underscore the independence, it is certainly one which would raise a few eyeballs, and I'd encourage people to to check out some of this material that we will have links on when we're at Video On Demand and Podcast On Demand stage. Paul, if you were in the New Zealand government at this stage, if you were like Stuart Nash, who was charged as a minister to actually make a decision on this, do you believe under our points that gobbledygook that you made, as you cited it, is there the ability for New Zealand government to prevent Rocket Lab from sending up things that it feels may be used outside of New Zealand's interests?
Well, they could make the terms of launch a lot more restrictive, but there's no will to do that. And let me backtrack just a second, because even though these constellations of nanosatellites that are launched include university research vehicles, you know, seemingly benign things for the advancement of human knowledge, you have to look at who's funding these projects, including those from the University of New South Wales. It turns out the Australian Defence Establishment has money in the game. And that's because, you know, security organizations, military organizations worldwide have a lot more money than private actors to engage in these sort of high-risk research and development projects. So, again, it goes back to the end user. Now, with regards to New Zealand maybe placing a slightly more restrictive regulatory regime on what gets launched, besides the fact that, you know, Rocket Lab will more than likely close shop and leave New Zealand. You know, now that the technologies are established, they can move anywhere. So the cat is out of the bag. But the other thing is, we have created here in New Zealand a defense space agency that has held significant talks with Rocket Lab and with U.S. military space officials about integrating New Zealand into the system. So you can be assured that the military command here in New Zealand does not want any restrictions placed on their ability to put nanosatellites in base or use the capabilities. I mean,
if okay, you're, so I'll put it to you that's a given. What we, if we were looking at it from a distance, a view from afar on the New Zealand government, it would pick up, well, I would pick up, and I would suggest that the Air New Zealand issue, where it was in business with the Saudi Arabian military, was obviously a surprise to the New Zealand cabinet. It was a surprise to the New Zealand Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern. She has obviously expressed a dim view of that practice, has ordered the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade in New Zealand to conduct an inquiry into how this went under the radar. If you're looking at that, it is almost as if the New Zealand government is transitioning to an ethics-based approach to such trade, which is quite different, perhaps, one could argue, from the John Key-led national government 8-9 years in office leading up to 2017. If you take that on board, then New Zealand, surely with the issues relating to Rocket Lab, while it's largely raising concerns from the point of view of United States military apparatus, it also raises this issue that you've spoken of in the past, that New Zealand becomes a target potentially. Should New Zealand government be moving on this issue to tidy up shop, to get it clear so that the New Zealand public and our trading partners, our security partners, know exactly where we stand?
Yes, of course. I should back up and point out that Air New Zealand has, as you mentioned at the onset, has contractual relationships with a number of militaries, the United States military and the Australian military, to refurbish petrol turbines. And that was the issue with the Saudis. Now, that contract was let by the U.S. Navy and under what is called the spillover clause, where the U.S. Navy has too much work, and so they spill over work to approve subcontractors, Air New Zealand being one of them. So that's how it came to be. And the mid-level managers who were overseeing the refurbishment side of the business, because this is a wholly owned subsidiary of Air New Zealand, they didn't think it was worth informing the higher ups because the total value of the contract was $3 million, you know, which is chump change. So, but it became a political football, and that's where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
The problem here is that no one scrutinizes the supposed scrutineers. That is, New Zealand is in transition. This is a country that used to be run by old white boys. And it's now a much more diverse place. Even within the traditional parties, we're seeing people of other persuasions. But what we haven't changed is the way of doing business when it comes to political oversight of certain private sectors, strategic sectors. By that, what I mean is, have you ever seen a parliamentary debate about Rocket Lab other than people applauding and going, oh, good for us?
Not to my knowledge. Yeah.
No. And that's just it. I think that it's not just a parliamentary problem. The only people who talk about these things in parliament are the Greens, and no one takes them seriously because they say things like, we should abolish the intelligence services. We should get rid of the special, you know, forces in the military. You know, they say things like that. They cannot be taken seriously. But the mainstream parties don't want to touch this. And when they do in committee, they rubber stamp the decisions of the NZDF or the intelligence community, or in this instance, talking about Rocket Lab, private companies that are clearly major security allies.
So the way we put it earlier on, Paul, that New Zealand's private enterprise needs to read the tea leaves, you're saying very strongly here and persuasively, New Zealand government needs to read the tea leaves if it wants to be in keeping with the New Zealand culture of independence.
Absolutely. I think that it reminds me of something. My father was a big industrialist in Latin America for many years, and we were talking about the debt crisis. The famous Mexican debt crisis in the 90s. Okay. And he said to me, you know, it's no longer a financial problem. It's a political problem. The bankers have made their money and now they're just creaming the interest. So a political decision has to be made in Washington to cut it off. Say, look, you've made enough. Mexico is on its knees. We need to get them back up and playing. That's exactly what's going on here. The private sector will do what it wants to do. It wants to make money. Does it advance humanity and knowledge? Sure it does, but it's there to make a profit. It's up to the political management, the political overseers, to say, look it, this is ethical and this is not. This is the Kiwi way, this is not. And we need that debate in parliament, but it is simply not happening. Why? Because the public's not interested. We spend more time watching the opening days of the new rugby season then we think about our involvement in foreign wars. Again, the only people who really spent time talking about this are the Greens, and they're not credible on security and defense.
Well, so there are some people that are reacting here. I'll bring the comments in if that's okay at this juncture, Paul. It's a long one. I'll just read the top part of it. It doesn't fit. And he's saying about how, this whole practice does not fit the New Zealand way. Just as Air New Zealand servicing engines for Saudi Arabia to bomb Yemen under the stewardship of Key and Luxon, excuse my spelling, he says, we are naive to believe we have squeaky clean hands when it comes to the kill chain. And he's making reference to what you said there, Paul. There's another part that the same user is saying here, and pesky future protests is what this user predicts. We've also got one here from David Mooring. Why sweat the small stuff? The USA has wasted trillions of the F-35 fighter program, and he makes references there. We've got another one here from a Facebook user. Wondered how long till you got to Mr. Teal's role in shares. Most people still believe New Zealand, he's referring to Rocket Lab, is a New Zealand owned company. Then there's David Mooring again. He says, in terms of Rocket Lab's launching satellites, I'll bring that up on screen, they are operating as a common carrier. same as the courier postal service, with a question mark there. Aside from terms of service, they can internally inspect each package launched. Anyway, that's some of the feedback that is coming in during the live program, Paul. If we are going forward from here, and if we were going to prioritise what is required from this to get this particular issue into line and this practice into line, you've alluded to the fact that, in your belief, the New Zealand Parliament needs to debate these issues. It is clearly starting to get traction within the Fourth Estate. Ourselves are talking about it, discussing it, you're analysing it, and you're reporting on it. You've got Ollie Nias in the spin-off. Ollie Nias, a New Zealand investigative journalist, freelance, who is writing for the spin-off on this particular issue and has done for some time, raising it. It is getting traction once one gets a feeling amongst the commentariat at what else needs to be done to get the attention of Labour-led government, Labour ministers in this particular Jacinda Ardern-led government.
First of all, just to answer David's question about the payloads, Rocket Lab has no say in the payload. Okay, they don't get to look at it. They can be allowed to look at it if the producers of the payload agree to that. But no, they just install it on the top of the booster and off it goes. I also should say that we cannot, the comparisons with the United States and its warmongering, these bigger states, it's sort of specious. And it's specious because, A, we don't have the capability to wage war on anybody. And secondly, we believe ourselves to be ethical and independent. So we're not caught up in the pushing and shoving that goes on, for example, or we would like to not be caught up in the pushing and shoving that goes on between, say, the PRC, Russia, and the United States. We're a very different kettle of fish. Now, having said that, I absolutely agree that this government in particular, given that it's moderately left-leaning, nominally left-leaning, should take a closer, harder look at our defense industry. And because it's not just what we've been talking about. New Zealand produces has on its shores, but deployed overseas, private military companies who provide VIP protection. They're ex-SAS, but they're acting as various types of mercenary around the world for who knows who. We have now in New Zealand, as there are in other parts of the world, private intelligence companies. Mm. I mean, my little geopolitical analysis consultancy is a type of that thing. But I just do open source. I don't do undercover investigations or what have you. But we have this thriving, I will call it the security sector. Mm. And it's virtually unregulated other than the strategic export regime, which, as we've discussed, is pretty loose in terms of its restrictions and oversight. And then there's virtually no regulatory regime that's worth the paper.
There's the private investigation kind of laws and regulations around that, but it doesn't really fit, does it? And it's kind of been seen to force this part of the industry into, if it's operating within New Zealand's territorial waters, into that space, and it doesn't actually fit. It's almost begging for a regulatory framework to be applied by the legislature in New Zealand on that particular point.
And I think that could be the comprehensive package. What's happened, because there's been a privatization of both military and intelligence functions throughout the world, but particularly in the Anglophone world since the mid-1980s. And it started out with logistics and that sort of thing, but it evolved into Blackwater, which itself has now evolved into this octopus of security, private security agencies. The thing has gotten pretty ugly. And what we have to understand is the money in the private sector to attract, let's say, government officials, so spies. People are leaving the NSA, the CIA, here in New Zealand, the GCSB, and the SIS to go into the private sector because the money is a lot better, the restrictions on what they can do are a lot fewer, and they can actually operate with some degree of impunity in many parts of the world. I don't want New Zealand's name associated with nefarious activities on behalf of certain, you know, sheikhs and dictators in far-flung areas where they're targeting dissidents. That is definitely not the Kiwi way.
So if New Zealand has a place in future issues relating to geopolitics or estranged partners around the globe as a mediator, potentially, as I have argued and as you and I have discussed in recent programs, then it needs to tidy shop. It can't be seen to be this honest broker, this potential mediator toward common ground, if it's got things under the carpet.
Yeah, you know, the trouble is, you know, we are, or we, you know, purport to be a genuine liberal democracy. And so how do you restrict the freedom of movement of individuals to go work for some private firm that in turn is working for a dictator?
I mean, well, if you look at that from the law point of view, and some of the definitions seem to be the problem, Phil Goff advanced a law going back a couple of decades that outlawed New Zealanders taking part in mercenary activities. Some people would say, well, mercenary activities, it's defined by the point that you've got an entity that is not government, maybe quasi, that is paying the soldiers basically to do what they're doing and they're in the business of profit. What we've seen around the Iraq war and the consequences of all of the instability after the Iraq war was contractors going, and not called mercenaries, but as you referred to, Blackwater and others, making mega millions out of this. And we saw a sizable contingent of ex-New Zealand SIS and those around that unit of actually making a business or being employed by businesses within that structure. It clearly fell outside of the existing legislation. We've got a government here that is transitioning, I would argue, to a more overt ethical trade and product practice. It seems that this type of legislation, in my view, has got to be a priority point, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they can do some small initiatives that begin to rein in some of the more egregious misbehaviors. You know, just as an example, when I left the Pentagon, I had to sign forms that basically said that I would not talk about the classified stuff that I was involved with for at least 20 years. And then when I wanted to write about it, because I was thinking of going back into academia and writing, that everything would have to be vetted by the Pentagon, you know, on those, because some subjects were simply could still be sensitive 20 years later. That was a restriction placed on my freedom to do things after the fact. It is possible that we could put restrictions on, for example, ex-intelligence officers going to work for, and then name the sort of regimes, the countries. I mean, I know for a fact that if you're an SIS officer, so a human intelligence officer in New Zealand, and you quit today, you can't work for the Chinese, all right? That's, you know, I don't know the full list of the banned countries, but I do know that it's countries. There's nothing
so
in.
The concept is there.
The concept is there. Now, that's in-house. That's within the SIS, the Secret Intelligence Service. It needs to be national-level legislature, and it needs to include the private sector, because you mentioned it. We've got Kiwis now engaged in embassy protection in Iraq, you know, what they call close personal protection, VIP protection. Are they mercenaries? They're being paid by the embassies. They're former professional soldiers. Are they mercenaries? Well, I'd argue you can call them whatever you want, but yes, they are.
And the New Zealand businesses providing the same services within our region in Papua New Guinea, West Papua, etc.
Exactly. And interesting you mentioned that, because where do they provide services for the logging industry and the mining industry in Papua New Guinea? Well, that opens a can of worms, because let's just say that the record on labor rights, human rights, environmental sustainability of these companies is really, really poor. And there have been murders and other such behavior that has been ascribed to the security personnel attached to these companies. I don't know if they're Kiwi or not, but the point is, you're entering into an arena that perhaps the New Zealand good name would otherwise choose not to be involved with. So national level legislation, more than anything else, because New Zealand is so liberal in its democratic ways, we should have a healthy national debate, led by Parliament about what are the limits. We understand conflict is here to stay. Security industries are going to exist whether we close shop or not. Where do we want to be in the kill chain? What is ethical and what is not unethical? And if we have that debate, I think that the problem will sort itself out actually rather quickly.
Thank you, Paul. On that particular note, let's close the program off. And in general terms, we've got submissions that come through to journalists on a daily basis, and there's one that has caught my eye this morning, and I thought we would exit the program on this note. And this video is from Niwa in New Zealand here, and it's about research that has been announced today relating to seabirds around the world. That's completely off topic for us, but it's basically footage of New Zealand albatross species in the Southern Ocean beyond New Zealand's territorial waters, where they spend around 40% of their lives just cruising those waves. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate your company. Hope your company returns again this time next week. Look forward to it. Take care. Be safe.